This is an ABC podcast.
Australia's first languages are many, but they're some of the most critically endangered in the world.
We need to talk up strong about our Aboriginal languages and the role that it does play within our communities, whether you're a community outside in Redfern or you're a community in remote South Australia. They are really important to Aboriginal people across this nation and Torres Strait Islanders.
Language revitalisation is a very culturally rich contemporary practice, and it brings a lot of health and well-being. It helps people feel a much stronger sense of who they are, their heritage, their identity, and they're able to bring this increased well-being into their everyday contemporary life.
You know, I do like to use the rhetoric that our languages have gone to sleep and we're waking them up. It's a feeling of connection, and I can feel the place, I can smell the place, I can see the snow gums, I can feel that crisp high country air, and it puts me right into that place. So that's what speaking my language does. I think in the long term it's healing me, so just speaking, just saying little bits and pieces in my language is kind of helping me to come to terms with who I am.
Daniel Browning with you here on RN. This is Away. Wherever you go on this continent, from the beaches and the headlands of the coastline to the waterholes and canyons of the vast inland, the snaking rivers, the mountains of the high country, the rainforests and the mangroves and the mudflats, you can bet that spot, that point, that mountain, that watercourse has an Aboriginal name, just like Ayers Rock always was Uluru. Aboriginal languages are literally in the Australian landscape. Now, these are Australian languages. They describe everything from the physical features of the country to the colours, the quality of the air, the intensity of the light. But what our languages also record are the complex system of relationships between human beings. They describe culture. It's not simply a form of communication. Language encodes culture and subjectivity. It describes a worldview. Today, we ask why Indigenous languages matter. We find out what it means to speak your language in a context of loss and dispossession. And we discover how languages are not dying, they just need to be awakened, and how new languages are emerging. We ask what needs to be done now to ensure language maintenance and revival long into the future. Along the way, we'll hear from some of the speakers who've been part of Word Up, our language series here on Away. And last week, we delivered the 100th episode in the series. The first Word Up ever was the actor Kylie Bracknell, who shared some Noongar language from the southwest of Western Australia. Now, Kylie and I spoke for a long time, but I got her talking about why she was drawn to language in the first place.
When I was a young girl, my grandfather used to talk to me about culture. And one of the things that I always gravitated to was the language component of our culture. So I made sure I sat down with the old people and the young people, mainly people of any age that knew a lot about our language, Noongar language, because I wanted to learn that. I wanted to take on the responsibility as an adult to keep our language alive for future generations, because I just knew and know today that there are young people who yearn for that part of our culture the way I did as a young person. So I spent as many days as I could, and I still do, with our custodians of language, with the people that not only keep it alive, but keep the spirit of it alive and use it daily, and also have that heart, that court, to share with the next generation. And not just next generation of Morini Mort either, of Indigenous mob. They share it with people who they know have proven themselves to be keepers of culture or caretakers of culture, and particularly the language component of our culture.
My name's Karina Lester. I sit as a director on First Languages Australia, which is the national body for Aboriginal languages, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander languages, working with a great group of men and women who from different states and territories are very passionate about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander languages.
we often say 250 is what, well, distinct languages. I've even heard people say up to 600 languages and dialects and sub-languages spoken here before 1788. What do you understand of that picture?
Well, that's the debate that, or the argument that often happens between Aboriginal people and linguists out there, in that, you know, my language is a language. The linguists may have classified it or put it into a category called Western Desert languages. My language is my language, and that should be counted as a language along with the other languages that are my neighbouring group. So linguists may have categorised it and said, okay, of 250 languages, but 600 sounds fair because 600 are including the dialects. We have lost quite a few of those languages as well, and so to really try and bring back some of those languages is really vital and important to the work that we do as First Languages Australia, but also as individual people within our own states and territories, and building our relationships with our Aboriginal communities and Torres Strait Islander communities to work closely with them on what it is that they wish to do about their language, and whether it's language revival or language maintenance or reclamation.
There is so much knowledge locked into every language. I'm Professor Jacqueline Troy. I direct Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander research at the University of Sydney, working with the Deputy Vice-Chancellor, Indigenous Strategy and Services. The linguist Nick Evans, who is heading up a wonderful Centre of Excellence for the Dynamics of Language, has said that every time a speaker of a language dies, it's like losing an encyclopedic set of knowledge. So you can imagine when an entire language goes out of use, we lose not just one edition of an encyclopedia, we also lose all the other related histories, knowledges, the sciences, the understanding of country, the relationships between people, the poetry, the art, all the things that make us human. So we lose a little bit of our humanity every time an Indigenous language stops being spoken. Indeed, any time, any language, but, you know, the Indigenous languages of the world are the ones that are most under threat and are least valued, which is crazy. But, of course, when people really have to face up to what language loss is, then it starts to be valued. Often when a language is on the brink of going to sleep, you know, all languages can be woken up again, but it takes a lot of effort.
My name is Gary Williams. I am Gumbangir, and this is my mother's country. I'm CEO of Murbai Language Centre. Our immediate area, the Gumbangir region, goes from the Nambucca River to the Clarence River up onto the plateau past Gyra. It covers several dialects, southern, northern, and what they call Nimboidan, which goes up onto the plateau. The first word is Ngalungir. Ngalungir means either clever man or doctor. The second one is Ginagay. Ginagay basically means hello, but Ginagay is a question word. The third word is Guram. Guram is a word that you heard when you were young from the elders. If you fell over or something happened to you, they'd say, oh, Guram, you know. And, of course, it can be said in different kind of ways. And if you'd won the lottery or something, they'd say, Guram, poor thing.
Gary Williams speaking a bit of Gumbangir. Gary is the CEO of the Murabai Language Centre at Nambucca Heads, which is up on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. And Murabai is an amazing organisation that's reviving language all the time. This is Away on RN. Today, why our languages matter. Professor Jacqueline Troy is one of the first people to revitalise a dormant language. In her groundbreaking research into the notebooks, kept by a British naval officer between 1788 and 1791. Notebooks that were only rediscovered in a library in London in 1972. In her own life, Jacqueline learned very early on about the presence of Aboriginal languages.
Well, I don't think I ever was without them, if you like. I had a strong sense from when I was a very small child. I was very lucky. My father took me and the rest of my family across Australia right up to the very top before I was five. And I experienced, I guess, the diversity of Aboriginal peoples as a very young person, and went into countries where people were still speaking languages right through, and also speaking the contact languages, the Creoles. And I can remember being quite fascinated as a small child because some of it sounded a bit like English, but it wasn't. And then as I got older, I wondered why it was that we couldn't speak our own language, and Narragu of the Snowy Mountains, and that became, I guess, a kind of a real concern for me. And I got the love. I think that's really why Aboriginal languages mean so much to me. And I thought about that moment where people on missions and reserves, for example, were told, right, you cannot speak your language, that's it. And so suddenly they were made mute. And, you know, of course, people continued to communicate, but not only were people told not to speak their languages, they were also, and beaten if they were caught speaking them. So they didn't pass the language on to small children. So that's why the next generations lost out as well. But, you know, we had people grouped together from many different language groups who normally wouldn't have come into such direct contact. So people couldn't necessarily even understand each other. So it was a really, you know, a hideous experience for Aboriginal people, very much a sort of late 19th, 20th century. The assimilationist period was really the death knell for a lot of our languages. Or, you know, I do like to use the rhetoric that our languages have gone to sleep and we're waking them up. But in the reality, some of them are gone for good. And I think that that's, again, it's a loss for all humanity. It's not just a loss for us as Aboriginal people.
Tell us about that moment when you were able to not just say a word, but to create meaning.
So I guess the first language I really worked with is the language of the Sydney area. And I had a great empathy for the language and the people of Sydney. It's now often called Gadigal or Darug, as it was called for a long time. That's sort of a more inland use now, Gadigal for the Sydney CBD area. But because it wasn't my own personal language, it was a slightly more detached experience. Not detached, I have a great passion for the language. I grew up in Sydney as well. But when I finally could bring myself to put something together in my own language, Narragu, which was simply to say, you know, the clan group that I am from, Naya Namichimitong, I am Namich, belonging to Namich. I did this very publicly to a conference, and I thought I would not only put up an image of my country and talk about my country, but I would also say something, introduce myself. And actually now, it's funny, I keep thinking I'm over it, but it has an absolutely fundamental impact on, I guess, my body and soul. I can feel my sinuses tickling, water welling up in my eyes right now.
Gujan means the bass sound when you drum on water. My name is Burigari Mirubirbar Delene Briscoe. I am a Guguyalanji woman. So the women in my clan group used to drum on water. It's a lost art form now, but the reason why I picked this word is because to give an example of words that sound like the thing that they're naming. So Gujan is the sound when you cup your hands together and splash it in the water and bring it back up. It goes Gujan. And that's the name of that sound.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what we find out often when we go more into these things is that things are more complex than we might have thought before we began.
Carmel O'Shaughnessy is a linguist, formerly at the University of Michigan, now at the Australian National University in Canberra. A long time ago, her research led her to a remote Aboriginal community perched on the edge of the Tanami Desert.
I first went to Lajumanu community, a Walpri community in the Northern Territory, in 1998. And I lived there for 4 years working in the Walpri English Bilingual Education Program. Since then, I've been doing language work in the same community and to some extent in the other Walpri communities, going back every year for various amounts of time and documenting the ways that people speak there. That includes the traditional way that people speak, traditional Walpri that people called strong Walpri, and a new variety of Walpri that's emerging that we call light Walpri.
The metaphor that is often applied when it comes to talking about Aboriginal languages is the one of death. We talk about language death, we talk about dying languages, we talk about extinction. But you have found with light Walpri another kind of plank in that story. It's not all doom and gloom or linguistic doom and gloom.
In the world of speakers of endangered languages and people who work on endangered languages around the world, the idea of death is hardly ever used anymore. People talk about their languages as sleeping if they're not currently being spoken. Because what we've seen in recent years is that languages can be revitalised and languages can even be revived to some extent over time. And so the idea that a language is completely gone is not the metaphor that the speakers of those languages and the communities that they belong to use that much anymore. But getting to the kind of complexities that there are, what can happen is that we can see a change more than a disappearing or more than a sleeping. And so in this community, what's happening is that younger speakers, not only children, but people under about age 40, they mostly speak in a variety that has come about in the last 40 years or so that it's essentially Walpri, but it has a lot of elements of Creole and English in it. So it's a mix, and that's their primary way of speaking. So it's new in the sense that it's not the way Walpri is spoken by the older speakers who speak the traditional Walpri and people in other communities. But it's not a shift to English or the Creole that's spoken in the north of Australia either. It's somewhere in the middle. And I think this shows a kind of a resilience and a kind of maintenance of the traditional language in the face of very strong pressure to move away from that language.
Is structurally, how is it different from say, a Creole or Walpri itself? They've got new rules?
That's a great question. Yes, they've got new rules. So we can think of rules as patterns, because people tend to think of rules as what you must do. If we think of them as patterns, we can think of them as this is the way that the words and the structures go together. So what happens in this new variety is that they take the grammar that goes with nouns in Walpri, which is suffixes or endings on words, and they combine that with verbs that are from English and Creole and have a lot of the grammar of Creole in them. So they bring these two different grammars in together and splice them together. And then there's an innovation that comes into the verb system, which again comes from English and Creole and Walpri, with just some very small changes that make the structure quite different in a way. An example of that difference is that you know that in English we say you and we for pronouns, and we can say I'm, the pronoun I, with m from am. Well, what they've done in this language is that they've added that m onto the pronouns you and we. So you say youm and wim, and then you add a verb with that. So that structure comes from all of the languages. We can see clearly where it comes from, but we end up with a creative outcome So the splicing together and the addition of the innovation makes this a new way of speaking.
My name is Matthew Ngamurari Heffernan. The language that I'm going to be talking today is called Pintabi Lurcha. It's a combination of two languages, Pintabi and Lurcha. So Pintabi comes from central Western Australia area, and Lurcha is everywhere, basically. It's got a mixture of traditions. So where I come from, it's mostly a combination of, say, Walpri, Aranda, Eastern Aranda, Pitindara. And that's because they got everyone from around that area and just dumped them all in one spot called Papanya or Warampi, a very famous place. Walta means family, but not just the nuclear family, not just mum and dad and siblings, but everyone, cousins, grandparents, second cousins, till you forget how they're related to you, you just know them as cousin.
Would you see creolization as a threat to, like, the integrity of, say, Yangunjara if people started to mix it up with English or another Aboriginal language? Is the integrity of the language an important thing to preserve?
Very much so. The integrity of Yangunjara, the integrity of your Aranda language, or, you know, the languages that are still so strong where you have those speakers is so important. But again, at the same time, we are so at risk of it getting tangled up. And it's happening in my Yangunjara language where we are speaking English words with a Pijinjara Yangunjara accent, like words such as gorla, which is sounds Yangunjara, sounds Pijinjara, but it comes from the English word school. You know, muruga again comes from the English word motor car. And so we are starting to now bring that in, which is really concerning. As a young Anang woman, I'm growing up hearing this, knowing this could potentially be the language that we are speaking, where we're speaking English in a Pijinjara Yangunjara accent.
Creoles are real languages like any other. What's different about them from a language, say, like English, which has changed a lot over a very long time, is that Creoles come into existence across a shorter period of time, maybe 1 to 3 generations. And they take the elements of the existing languages, but they put them together in this way that is a different linguistic system. But it's just as complicated a linguistic system as any other. But really, in terms of human cognition and how humans process languages, this is a bonus because we do get to see what actually happens and how humans can adapt their linguistic systems when they have to in the face of extreme social disruption. So we can actually learn a lot from these changes, even though for the speakers of the traditional languages, to see the loss is, of course, sad. And I think we can all understand a sense of something being lost. But at the same time, we can see something being renewed or created.
So there is a mixed debate at the moment about, you know, the need to really keep it authentic and to really work with those knowledgeable people that are still with us to really identify those new words and go through a process of, okay, then what do we call an iPad? What do we call an iPhone? What's the Yangunjara Pijinjara term for, you know, Facebook and Twitter and, you know, there's certainly need for that. And I think it needs to be driven by the community. And I think we who work in the area of language needs to identify the group that can provide that guidance and that support because, again, it is those influences from outside that are now coming in to our cultural ways, our cultural language, that we need to really sit down and work as a group on identifying what is then the Yangunjara or Pijinjara term for Facebook or an iPad.
Hello, I'm Maggie Burns. I come from Papanya community, which is northwest of Alice Springs. My mother comes from there. I also speak Walpuri. Walpuri is my grandfather's language. And Walpuri is next door neighbours with Pendabi Luritja. So that's how I can speak Pendabi Luritja and Walpuri. Pendabi Luritja is spoken throughout the Western Desert, and Walpuri is spoken in the Tanami Desert, which includes four communities, and that's Lajimano, Nyerpi, Yundamu, and Willara. There's no really such word in Walpuri, say goodbye. You can say goodbye. Well, the right translation would be in Walpuri. It's ngakaranganyanyi. That means see you later, or see you next time, or see you when I see you.
Languages are not simply tools to deliver information. Languages have a very strong identity component for people. It may be that about 40% of the world's languages are spoken by populations of under 10,000, and in Australia of populations much, much less. So people maintain this diversity for a reason, you know, for a social reason, because of the way in which people are able to make use of linguistic devices in our social organisation. And so the languages themselves are a very important, not only resource, but a very important part of culture. And that diversity, you know, it's not accidental. People maintained it because it was important to them. It showed where people came from, who people were related to, and so on.
So we as people spent, you know, it looks like we were here for at least 60,000 years. That's the archaeological record. Of course, our histories say we were always here, but it's a long time depth. And we spent 60,000 years making our lives as complicated as possible. We are the most socially complex people in the world. We can teach people about human relationships in a way that no other people can. I challenge any other group in the world to be able to place people within the world in the way that we do. We are the peace negotiators, the human relationships negotiators par excellence. And there is nobody who doesn't have a word for some relationship. So to anybody else in the world. And of course, when people invaded our countries, they immediately were given kinship terms and people swapped names. Here in the Sydney area, even Arthur Phillip, the first governor, called Bennelong Duru, and Bennelong called Arthur Phillip Bianna, father. So it was father and son. And but also people swapped names. So every Aboriginal person in the colony who was anybody had the name of one of the First Fleet officers, and equally the First Fleet officers were given Aboriginal names. So people were incorporated. That's what went on in this place, and that's because that's how we operate. I don't think people thought these people were going to stay forever. but so the naming has ended. Why has the naming ended?
Budgeti Malinawal. My name's Richard Green. Inaya Mirang Darak. I belong to the Darak. Inaya Mirang Darak Burburongalwa. I belong to the Darak and the clan of the Red Kangaroo. That's what Burburongal means, is from the land of the Red Kangaroo. Buru is an old kangaroo. Burongal means where we belong. Birang means stars, spelt with an O. The O is an obsolete phoneme used by William Dawes from the First Fleet, the Sirius. Our older people took notice of him and realised that he was a righteous sort of man, that they regarded him as a clever man, as they did Philip. They called him Bianga, which is father. And we should say, Didjirigora Wagal Bene, Yavana. Thank you very much to the people that did record it, because it's been there and held for us today.
Richard Green, who spoke Darug for our Word Up series, where we feature a different Indigenous language every week. This is Away on RN, Daniel Browning with you, and today, why our languages matter. Karina Lester is an Aboriginal language worker we heard from earlier in the program. She works at the Mobile Language Team, a specialist unit within the University of South Australia. Karina is also a fluent speaker of Yungunjara.
and also an Anangu translator. She hosts her own language show on Radio Adelaide. Now, in Anangu culture, in Yangunjara, there are multiple ways of speaking. There are codes, there are sub-languages. There's a polite way to speak with certain people. There's a ceremonial, sacred language, and even a way of bringing people up to date, a bit like the morning news.
There are languages within language as well, and I've often talked about, like the Jalbawanga I spoke up about in Word Up, was a language that is a very polite etiquette language that is at risk now because we are not speaking. So only a group of our elder generation would have that knowledge to Jalbawanga. Gujuvuda others wouldn't have the knowledge of knowing how to speak this sideways language, which is a very polite and very etiquette language. Aniji, you know, our ceremonial language, it's at risk. We are not speaking it. Maybe a handful of people speak it. And so there is such urgency just to work and to really then for us as Aboriginal people to have that debate and discussion about what is it that we need to do then to bring it back out into the bush and to use it back out there in the bush because it's language from the bush. So what is it that we need to do to maintain that?
G'day, Warren H. Williams. My name is Warren H. Williams. I come from a little place called Ndaria, which is formerly known as Hermansburg. I'm an Aranda person. The Aranda language is mostly Central Australia, Alice Springs, but I speak Western Aranda. Here in Central Australia, we got five Aranda. There's Central, Alice Springs, then there's Eastern, then there's Western, that's Asmob, then there's Anmajara, which is Northern, then and Pradama, which is Southern. Family out here, we born into language. English is sometimes fourth language. I'm a muso. I get to travel. I'm a lucky person. I get to travel around this country. And the word, one of the words I use sometimes is irarerma, which means getting homesick or missing home. Yeah, irarerma.
Why do you think Indigenous languages matter? Just a broad question.
Yeah, I think they matter for a few broad reasons. There's the scientific view of what they have to teach us about human cognition, how we process languages and what can happen to them and so on. There's the cultural information and transmission importance, that they themselves are important cultural knowledge, and then they contain important cultural knowledge. Part of that is also their aesthetics. It's like we think of literature as written and as having being written materials that have been around for a long time, but these languages are literature, and the traditional songs and the traditional stories, they're beautiful. You know, it's literature that just is spoken. And of course, there's the really important identity factor. These languages are intimately linked to the land and the people, and that's very, very important to the speakers. And then there's just the fact that they belong to Australians, and so they're important to us simply for that reason.
A lot of what we do in language is to actually understand another person. So, you know, human language is something that makes us human, first of all. And it's likely that actually I've been thinking that our use of creativity, our development of creativity, the ability to imagine, which then matched up with ability to empathise, which is another, probably an adaptive strategy that humans developed. We're not exactly the most ferocious looking creatures, but we can communicate with each other in a way that other animals don't seem to do. So we can tell each other emotive stories and we can engage with that. You do that with language, whatever form it takes. I include, as I said, sign languages. And so when people suddenly can't
do that anymore. We lose all that capacity in that language. And so why should we keep Indigenous languages going? Why not just get everybody to speak English in Australia and forget about all the other languages of Australia? Well, it would also be excruciatingly boring. I mean, what people hold dear and, again, value, and one of the things we do in becoming creative and empathetic is we engage with diversity. I mean, if you've got no diversity, you don't need to do that. You know, without the linguistic diversity, without what Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander languages can bring to this country and the world in general, we lose something really exciting and interesting apart from anything else. Our languages are actually not only healing for us, they're healing for the whole country. If we could name each other and place each other properly within all our societies, and we weren't the fringe dwellers that we still are, unfortunately. We were more central and we could guide this country. These are our countries. We know how to run them. Give us a proper voice in that. Give us our languages as our voice in that.
I'm Emily Woodabar and I'm a singer-songwriter from Bickerton Island and Groote Island in the Gulf of Carpentaria in Northern Territory. The language we speak is called Anantliokwa, and my people are the Wanantliokwa people, which means saltwater people. I chose Ngarugu Jainama, which means I'm hurting, because it's a beautiful word that translates to something so sad, but the flow of the way that we speak it back at home. So Ngarugu Jainama Nganyang Andunda, which means that my heart is hurting. It's such a pretty way to say something sad, and the role of the ng and the r, it's very fluent and transposes into a lot of different meanings. So, you know, we could be at a funeral, we could be sitting down, and it's just a united word that everyone understands because they feel it. Sometimes when I speak it, I feel it in my heart that I'm hurting.
To be real, Noongar language is only really spoken by, I think, less than 1% of our community. And to me, it makes me a little bit sad, but ever the optimist, I try to celebrate it with strength to almost imply that all of our mobs speak that language. Because in our way, if some of us speak it, then we all speak it. Because sometimes language is spoken without words, and a lot of our language and culture is about the strong spiritual element. So as long as we have our core speakers there that are willing to share it and celebrate it with mob that are interested in being future caretakers, to me it will always mean that all of our mob have our language. I guess my challenge is trying to encourage everyone to use it so we don't lose it and leave that responsibility on just a few people. Sometimes it can be a bit too heavy. But in truth, if I switch to the realist cap, then we do need to have more of our mob actually using it and speaking it. Because in this day and age, people don't value it as much as they do a lot of things in this world. But if we want to tread a cultural pathway, then language is very important for that. And it's that classic, strong traditional structure of one person not carrying any of the burden or the weight of a sole responsibility within the cultural links. That load is something that should always be shared. And what that does is it enriches our community to respect all of the people that are doing their bit for our mob.
Kylie Bracknell, speaking about caretaking and responsibility in language. One of many voices in today's feature, Why Our Languages Matter. Thanks to Professor Jacqueline Troy from the University of Sydney, who did some groundbreaking research in the 1990s into the Gadigal or Sydney language. Thanks also to Professor Carmel O'Shaughnessy, a linguist at the Australian National University in Canberra, for sharing some of her work on the evolution of light Walpuri in the community of Lajamanu on the edge of the Tanami Desert. And a big thank you to Karina Lester from the Mobile Language Team at the University of South Australia.
Yugichi Yanayin Kuba.
Stiff Gins and their first song entirely in language. That's Yundal off their superb Wind and Water album. Now, for the next installment of Word Up, the 101st episode in our language series here on Away. Dangari language is spoken along the mid-north coast of New South Wales and west into the New England ranges, places like Kempsey, Southwest Rocks, Crescent Head and Walker. Now, Ray Kelly Sr. is a Dangari man. He's also an academic at the University of Newcastle. He was awarded an honorary doctorate in recognition of his work in community development. And he set about studying Guri languages from what he calls the crossover space of academia and community knowledges. Here's Ray Kelly Sr. sharing some words in Dangari.
Bukulba means happy.
Word Up, celebrating the International Year of Indigenous Languages.
Kinagai.
Birluin.
Walter.
Badgili.
Anpanairinja.
Jalbawanganja. Ngaraguchainama.
Wukuk.
Yinjamara.
Delkup.
Diepa.
Murupuk.
Kinagai Gurieri. Ngai Nirai Rai Kelly. Barandangai Goyaliri Dangati. Hello everybody, my name is Ray Kelly and today I'm going to be talking to you about the language Dangati. Dangati is a language that was recorded in a number of places along the mid-north coast of New South Wales. There is a particular group of people that were recorded in the 1960s and 70s at Bellbrook and Kempsey on the mid-north coast, as well as people in the New England Ranges area. So considering where Dangati belongs to, I kind of figure it fits somewhere in all of that space. The word that I want to talk about is bali. Bali, when used to describe something, usually will mean something that's light, and it also recognises the daylight as well. So when it's pronounced twice, it's bali bali. And it means the dawn, or that time just before the dawn. For me, it also represents the language of children, and that is the language that children are beginning to start to talk. It suggests that you can almost make things out And as the light becomes stronger, you clearly make sense of the language. So it's the language of children, but it's also a sign for something that's soft or the soft light. The second word is the word bindiwal. Bindiwal. The word bindi means belly, but it's also a sense of the doctor. So a bindiwal is a doctor, somebody who will take care of you. Bindiwaldu marumalir nirnar. The doctor will make a cure or the doctor will fix you up. And I'm not sure whether it's male or female. I'm sure it's both. But these people were knowledgeable about plants and the use of plants and how they would, they would create cures or prevent, the spread of certain things. I think as kids we only knew of one, and that was for the wild raspberry, which was more of a laxative. The idea of, for me, when working in this area of language research, and I work predominantly with sound files, that is to say that I listen to firsthand to first language speakers. And so when I hear these first languages speakers communicating in language, I kind of have a sense that we still know language, we still have this broad sense of language, but unfortunately we sometimes miss those tying pieces. So the my next word is the word gun or gunna, which was recorded by Watkins Tench in 1788 in Sydney. And basically he said we were crap. That's what the word meant. But in another sense, the word going is can mean nothing. So if I was to say, have you got a smoke? And somebody said, gunyai, I got nothing. So it really means nothing at all. The point I make here is that, you know, my father, my late father, would often speak to us as kids in this way. And we understood what he was saying. But as we grew older and, you know, Western education became and English became dominant and powerful in our lives, we tended to put this material down. And in the act of trying to reclaim it, it's very difficult when somebody comes up and says, oh, well, I think you're wrong. Now, I'm more than happy today to have a conversation with people about how I see language and the power of language, and to describe how those tags actually help uncover and help decipher of language. Just about every word begins with a root word, but when you value add to that, when you create a composite, and sometimes when non-Indigenous people, recorders earlier on, and sometimes Aboriginal people, when they were recording these languages, they saw the word in its entire sentence in its entire length, but didn't understand that these very important ties are tied in the middle and they create an extension to one vowel or one movement. Very quickly, look, in 2006, the University of Newcastle gave me an honorary doctorate. What I set about doing upon receiving that, and I was very pleased, and you know, I was very taken back by it. But what I wanted to do was, I felt like I wanted to earn not just that recognition, but to be involved in higher education's setting, and I wanted to learn about, I wanted to make sense of those things that I saw that brought me into conflict with the language world. So, what I set about doing was to join the university, went through the master's program, studied, worked predominantly with these sound files, transcribing the language, beginning to start to hear language from the place that I call the crossover. My fear is, though, that what we tend to do is we tend to only work from the system of reading. And what I'm most interested in is building a cohort of people who will sit down and have a discussion at the very, very minute level of language. So that when we're looking at these words, we can then go, oh, okay, so they do have a relationship to each other. They do work together. The example is a very simple word. The word for ma, ma, is right across a number of language spaces, can denote movement, can denote making, and can be a positive word to do things. Now, in my language space, that goes to the hand, ma-ra. And so if I wanted to say something, I'm going to do something in my hands, ngaya yama ma barkan guma, I'm going to make a boomerang. So for me, when we're talking about this language space, I hope that people will allow others into the language space. Please make room. Keep an open mind. Don't shut anybody down, because if we suffocate the languages, and I mean by saying, no, there is only one way to look at this material, if we suffocate the language cannot breathe, and therefore it cannot be spoken and openly shared. Barandang ngia, ngia, that's us, ngia goyaliriko, well, I've been talking, Dangati Goya, I've been talking today in Dangati. Our word for goodbye is simply Berlu, and Berlu means soon. I hope to hear from you or see from you or speak to you soon.
Word Up, bringing you the diverse languages of Black Australia, one word at a time.
Ray Kelly Sr. sharing some words from his language, Dangati. You can hear the full series of Word Up on the ABC Listen app, including an episode from Ray Kelly Jr., who spoke to us about the Awabakal language. For now, that's our program. Away is co-produced by Rudy Bremer, with technical production today by Russell Stapleton. I'm Daniel Browning. We'll have more Indigenous culture for you next Saturday at 6 p.m. and on Tuesday afternoon after the news at midday. We're always online at abc.net.au/rn. Find Away in the program menu, or you can find us on the ABC Listen app. To play us out, the title track from the late Dr. G's posthumous album. This is Jari Miri, Child of the Rainbow, in E flat major.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.